Hey, In the Money listeners, check this out. TVG is the official betting partner of the Breeders' Cup, and we here at the In the Money Players Podcast are proud to be an official podcast partner of TVG. We are rapidly approaching the two best racing days of the year. Get in on the action and start betting on all the great races across the country. You don't want to miss out on this exclusive offer. Download the TVG app today or go to www.tvg.com/fall for the best offer to start betting now. TVG will give you a risk-free bet up to $200 on a single horse to win in any race. You'll get a 100% refund up to $200 if your horse loses. Bet with confidence. It's a win-win when you play with TVG because TVG offers the best online betting experience with plenty of promotions for all customers, including a free-to-play $100,000 contest. TVG is available on your computer, your phone, Amazon Fire Stick, Roku, or Apple TV, pretty much anywhere you can get online. Just download the TVG app or go to www.tvg.com/fall and sign up. That's www.tvg.com/fall. Age and residency restrictions apply. Void where prohibited by law. See the full terms and conditions at www.tvg.com/fall. You're listening to the In the Money Players Podcast. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Podcast Monster Pod. Breeders' Cup Turf Races sponsored by our friends at TVG. Hoping you'll support them this Breeders' Cup season. Peter Thomas Fornital back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker. Once again, we have a slate of amazing guests lined up. And this show, we're actually going to have a co-host for the entire thing. You know him by now. He's back on the planet Texas. He's the people's champion. Jonathan Kinchin, how are you, my friend?
Temporarily on the planet Texas. This is one of the most exciting times of the year. I spent a lot of time today actually digging through a lot of these turf races and some exciting stuff to unfold.
Well, we're going to hear your thoughts as we go along. No need, like in the juvenile show, to probe you for extra information. So I'll just say in general, I know some years at the NHC, you have avoided the turf races, thinking the dirt races were more predictable. In the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, do you have a similar attitude? Will you focus more of your betting action on the dirt than the turf?
I think that my comfort zone will always be with the dirt, just for reasons we've described over and over. And in a sentence, it's that I just feel like dirt racing is more predictable. Turf racing is more about trip. The best horse doesn't always win, so on and so forth. For me, I will use turf races in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge because these are the top of the line horses. I know who they are. I know their background. I know their story. It's not like it's some 16 claimers at Gulfstream in a 14 horse field where seven of them have never started before. Like, those are the races that I want to avoid.
I think that makes sense. And I will say, as chaotic as turf racing can be, and we've certainly had some shock results at Breeders' Cups before, don't get me wrong, but I do feel like there are more horses on days like this that you can really bet with confidence and get stuck into, who have the ability to make their own trips or overcome trouble, than in, say, a wide open field of 12 at Gulfstream during the NHC. It's kind of apples and oranges. So I think your idea does make sense. We've got a great crew assembled to help us out on this show. We always say, wouldn't it be great to just record conversations with your friends and put them up as podcasts? Well, that's pretty much what we're doing on this show. Want to throw out one more reminder about some extra Breeders' Cup content that we're involved with. On Tuesday, 7 o'clock Eastern, we're doing a webinar with our friends at Stats Race Lens. You can sign up for it. You can find the link over on the InTheMoneyPodcast.com blog. I will put that in a post that makes it clear which one it is. And then you can also sign up through my Twitter. There's a pinned tweet with the link to sign up for that webinar. Interact with us and let's talk pick six. But before that, we're going to start off with the Matisse brothers talking turf sprint. Then we're going to bring in Naomi Tucker to talk about filly and mare turf, Barry Faulkner to talk about the mile, and we're going to close things out with Nick Luck on the turf. JK, you ready to take some notes?
I am. I'm looking forward to it. These are my homework when it comes to the Europeans. I trust our friends from the other side of the Atlantic.
I like it. And without further ado, let's bring in our first set of guests. All right. And now to talk about the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, we're going to bring in professional horse players, successful contest players, all around good guys, Duke and Paul Matisse. Paul, how are you doing today?
Okay. How are you doing, Pete?
Doing very well. Excited to talk about these races with you. Duke, everything good out there? You enjoy your vacation?
Everything's wonderful sitting by the pool.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. I'm envious. I'm buried in, I'm underground and I'm buried in paper and been talking for what seems like 3 days straight. I could use some serious pool time. I want to pick your guys.
Yeah, you better get the pool.
I want to pick your guys' brains about the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. JK, I'm actually going to start with you on this one. Just curious to know how interested you are from this far out. Do you have any ideas on this race? Have you dug into it, or is this one you're going to be looking at between now and next weekend?
I do. I kind of love a horse here. Unfortunately, I'll say it for them since they probably won't. It's unfortunate that Pay Any Price wasn't around to run in this race going the flat five. That would have been absolutely perfect for him. But since he's not here, I love Pure Sensation in this spot. The horse is fast, has nine wins going five furlongs. Remember saying this is going to be a flat five. So it's going to be quick. It's like a quarter horse race. The last five wins were on yielding, soft, firm, and good. This horse will run on anything. I think he's going to like the fast turf. I think Pure Sensation is going to be tough in this spot. So I love Pure Sensation. Obviously the draw is going to have to matter. But Pure Sensation was where my eyes went initially.
I'm a big fan as well. I'm also a big fan of Imprimis, who was last seen running in the Woodford at Keeneland, but I thought might be rounding into form a little bit. Just one that I'm keeping on my radar. Anytime a horse runs as well as Imprimis did early this year, to the point where I had a thought in my head about the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, I found over time, when you come up with the idea early in the year and then they actually show up in the spot, best not to quibble too much about the recent form. But really, Duke and Paul, we're here to get your very early thoughts on this race. Paul, we'll start with you. Does anything stand out to you in this year's Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint?
Yeah, I like a horse a lot. The thing I've had a problem with this turf sprint, well, there's two things. One, there's no speed. That's what the weird thing. So one thing about Pay Any Price, he would have been front in this race, I can tell you that. And the second thing is, I can't, for some reason, this is one of the races where I don't know who's actually in all the time. But I'm hoping the horse that I like is in. The Peter Miller horse, is he in the body?
JK, you've been on the spot with this.
He is in the body. I think his second preference is the mile. But his first preference is this race.
Yeah, I really like him in this race. I'm a little worried that there's not enough speed, but I'm going to guess he's going to be fast enough to even stay close with the way that there's no... It's really shocking to me, a 5-furlong turf race for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. I wonder what the other guys think. I'm just shocked that this race doesn't have any rockets in it. You know, I mean, you would think... The fastest horse, turf horses in the world, you know, that they'd, this group would have trouble with the Australian horses, I think, because they don't look, you know, there's no rockets, you know, and you would think 5 furlongs would be the way to go. But I really like, I think that, you know, Peter Miller, the home field advantage, he's never done the 5-furlong turf at St. Anita, I believe, but, you know, he always liked the hill, so, and he liked the Santa Anita turf course, so I don't think that's going to be a problem. As long as I guess I would worry about is if he drew outside. I wouldn't want him to be too far outside, but, you know, anything in the middle or the inside, I think would be good for him.
Duke, what do you think about the speed horses in here? Is there one that stands out to you likely to be the best of the speed?
There's like Paul said, there's not a real fast 5-furlong turf horse. I mean, I don't consider Pure Sensation that fast, even though I think he is the fastest in this race, unless Sheki Shabazz draws in. He's pretty quick, but it's so strange to have a 5 furlong turf race at Santa Anita and not have a, you know, like Paul said, not have a rocket. I mean, going back to Payne Price, he had a tendon issue a few months back, so he's off. But he would have been deadly in this spot. I mean, because when you get the lead at Santa Anita going 5/8, you got a huge chance of winning. That being said, I think Imprimis has run the best races in the past. I think he's the fastest horse, you know, if he runs his best. But he's been a little bit off form his last two. So I don't really have a strong opinion, but I think Pure Sensation will probably make the lead.
I would think so.
Give him a big chance. I agree with like what Pete said, or what Jonathan said. It does give him a big chance because he is going to get the lead, but.
He's got a lot of class.
That's the one thing. That horse loves Parks. That's the only thing that makes his form look a little bit better. So I'm not sure. I don't love him in this spot, but he does have a big shot.
JK, for the Breeders' Cup betting challenge, do you like Pure Sensation to the degree that you could see making a big play on him in here?
No, I don't think, you know, look, it's going to be a kind of a crapshoot. If he makes a lead and doesn't win, there's a lot of horses that can win from the, you know, kind of coming out of it and just being quicker than the other one. So I think it's a race that it'd be hard to lean on. Now you could possibly play some doubles in and out, you know, maybe some stuff with, you know, if you like Covfefe or if you like, you think Bellafina's going to run better or something like that, maybe you can play into Pure Sensation, or you can play out if you're a Mr. Money guy or an improbable guy, want to try to beat Omaha Beach. There's an opportunity there. But no, I don't think I'll be swinging too hard in this race in the BCBC.
One other runner I definitely want to touch on is Fairyland, who didn't like the boggy ground at Longchamp back on Arc Weekend. But in form terms, having a Group 1 win over 5 furlongs from the Curra, in a normal grass race in the USA, this is the kind of horse that I would be taking a long look at. But the Euros have had such a lack of success in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint so far. I'm just tempted to say, you know what? If Fairyland beats me, she beats me, even with the weight allowance and everything else. Duke, what's your general attitude towards the European shippers in this race? Am I being too harsh, or are we at a point where it makes sense to look in another direction?
No, I don't think you're being too harsh. They haven't fared well, and that's at a little bit longer distances too. They haven't fared well at 5.5 and 6.5. So I don't think they'll do well here, because they're definitely not geared up for this kind of race. This is more like 4.5. This 5 furlong race at Santa Anita is about as short a race as you're ever going to have in a Breeders' Cup. It's whoever gets to that turn first. That first, you know, when you go down that backstretch, you get to that turn first, you got an enormous edge on winning, and I don't think that will be Fairyland getting to that turn first.
No chance. No chance of that, I wouldn't think. What do you guys think of Girls Know Best in this spot? I'm just looking at pace figures and looking at others that might be in that position, Duke, that you just described. Paul, do you think she would have any chance to make some noise?
Well, not normally. But again, I think, you know, more like I didn't like Pure Sensation at all either, initially either. But I guess she would be one of the likely leaders now. In fact, he's probably going to get the lead, maybe, you know, depending on how Pure Sensation wants to be ridden. In the past, he has conceded to other horses sometimes, but I don't think she's good enough. Her races that, you know, off of, you know, her finishes, I don't think are good enough to win the race, but she gets the lead.
And if she gets in, that means that Shecky Shabazz got in. And suddenly it starts to kind of quicken up a little bit.
Okay,
here.
So she's after Shaker Shabazz?
Yeah,
I told you I've had trouble figuring out what the field is actually going to look like.
She's after Shecky, yeah.
Shecky's another who has pace figures that you'd think would put up in the vanguard for sure. And right, all of a sudden, if you have all three of those in, I guess the good thing about your idea, JK, with Pure Sensation is that in my mind, even though Pure Sensation very often ends up on the lead, I don't feel like he absolutely needs the lead. Or if you wind up with those three speed types, would that make your enthusiasm a little bit less?
No, because like Duke said, he doesn't necessarily have to be on the lead. He just, you know, in the situation, if those others don't draw in, which I think it'll be hard to get to those other two. Final Frontiers in front of Shecky Shabazz, and Girls Know Best. So there's need to be two defections for those to get in. So and then you also have the other situation where, you know, Paul's kind of got me thinking about Ohm again here. I felt like Ohm, it was going to be entirely too short for Ohm. But because no one's going to take advantage of the five and really open up and use their speed, then like Ohm's, he just might be connected. And when it comes to late kick and finishing, he's going to finish better than the rest of these. So I'm starting to kind of warm up to that Oris a little bit more based off of that situation. Belvoir Bay is another one I forgot that has had some speed in the past. Hasn't really done all that well, but obviously could improve for Peter Miller when he gets back out there and likes the five furlongs as well.
All right, we've got some good ideas for starters in this race. We'll know a lot more next week when we get a pure composition of the field. Paul, do you project to be doing a Steve Bick appearance or anything? Are you going to be posting picks anywhere, or is this folks' chance to hear a couple of your thoughts on this year's Breeders' Cup?
Nobody's contacted me yet. I sometimes do it before, but a lot of times Steve likes to have me on after, so I'm not certain. Well, I just want to go back to that turf sprint thing. You know, Final Frontier should have been in this race. That's last year, pay any price, Duke will start arguing that he should have been in the race. Final Frontier should have been in this race.
He's a
good horse.
100%.
Is he buried 100%. Deep on the AEs, JK? He doesn't have any shot to get in?
No, he's next. He's the first one in.
Okay, so I mean that very likely could happen, and it sounds like Paul, that would maybe change your view a little bit. You'd have a little bit more enthusiasm when it comes to Final Frontier.
He's definitely
chances.
A horse I'd consider, even at five furlongs. He's a very talented horse.
All right. Like I said, plenty of good thoughts there. More to come. I want to thank you guys, Duke and Paul, for taking time out today and coming on to join us for these Monster Pods.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you, JK.
All right. Next up, a guest I'm very excited to bring back to the In the Money airwaves. I've been really enjoying her contributions over the last few weeks, but we changed things up on her a little bit this week. Instead of conducting an interview, we've got her studying form. Naomi Tucker, how are you today?
Hi, Pete. I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
So for somebody who has been through the Darley Flying Start program, very comfortable on the back of a horse, knows her way around a sales ring, how comfortable are you with this assignment? How much form study / handicapping do you do on a regular basis?
Actually, quite a lot more than you would think. As part of being on the production team at the New York Racing Association, we've been spending the last 2 weeks trying to figure out which horse is going where, how they're going to stack up in terms of the Breeders' Cup. So in general, I spent a lot of time watching replays and as well keeping up with the European racing scene, so to speak, as I'm from Europe. It's sort of in my day-to-day schedule. So yeah, not as limited as you might think. I do a fair bit of
course. I didn't mean to imply that. I was just trying to set up your bona fides, JK.
You're fine.
Let's bring in Jonathan Kinchin. I know there's a lot of back and forth about where Magical is going to run. Is she going to contest the turf? Is she going to show up for this showdown with Sister Charlie here? If you were hired suddenly in yet another freelance gig as Aidan O'Brien's bloodstock consultant in America, which spot would you recommend he run Magical in?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'd run in the turf. I wouldn't want to have to bang heads with Sister Charlie. I guess I'd rather try to have to hook up with Bricks and Mortar, who's got the distance question marks. Yeah, I mean, she's got the turf as her first preference here, so I'd imagine that's the direction that they're leaning.
There was some talk last weekend, Naomi, you and I had this conversation off air, that the Ballydoyle crew were leaning towards a tilt in this race. Where would you rather see her show up?
I actually have to disagree with Jonathan. When you look at her record, she's a four-time Group 1 winner, and three out of those four Group 1s have come over this filly and mare turf distance of a mile and a quarter. So sort of if you look back at her record, you think that would suit her better. But as we were discussing this, I thought she was going to go to the Philly Mayor Turf. Then now, obviously, they come out with the first preference being the turf. But then there still seems to be the consensus that she might actually pick this spot going to clash with Sister Charlie. So it's a very interesting race, or it will turn out to be.
If the showdown does happen, Sister Charlie versus Magical, which direction would you lean, Naomi? And I usually don't hold your the guest's feet to the fire this far out, but this race, and tell me if you disagree with this, I feel like if it is the two of them, we're going to see that clash of the Titans, and it's going to be one or the other, and everybody else is running for minor awards.
I think you're right there for sure. For me, I personally, having seen Magical in the flesh multiple times, seen how laid back she is, how talented she is, how she seems to deal with anything that gets thrown at her, I would like to put her on top here again as well. But if you're looking at her schedule, this is going to be her eighth consecutive start at grade or like group or grade one level, 10th start of the year. Gosh, I mean, this is very, very taxing on the horse. She's traveling a lot. She's turning around in, 2 weeks from Longchamp, from the Arcs to the British Champions, and now another 2 weeks into the British Cup, either the turf or also this race. This is tough, and she has done some sort of a similar schedule last year, but she wasn't on 10 starts for the year. She had sort of an easier campaign at the beginning of the year. So I just really wonder how much that has been taking out of her. And to me, I think she's the most talented. She's run 3 times second to Enable. She's finished second to another world's best racehorse in Crystal Ocean, aside from her own full-time, you know, Group 1 winning exploits. To me, she is one of the best turf horses there currently is in the world and one of the toughest. So I'm still going to place her on top, but with some reservations as to how she arrives at Santa Anita.
I take your point, and normally, JK, I'll get your thought on this. When you have one horse who you know this has been the seasonal target from the beginning of the year, and another who had multiple other seasonal targets, and this is one more race in the form cycle, normally that would be a huge negative and point me in the direction of Sister Charlie here. But having seen this movie before with Found back in 2015, and having seen how I traveled with her that year, I was at the Arc, I was at Champions Day, I was at the Breeders' Cup, and I got a close look at her in the flesh in all three spots. And even though it seemed to take a physical toll on her, she still went and won the Breeders' Cup turf. How do you see it, JK? What's your inclination with Magical in either spot? Are you just going to assume that she can hold up to this amount of racing?
Well, I mean, I don't think you really have to assume. She did the exact same thing last year, right? 13 days from Longchamp to Champions Day, and then back here in 14 days, and she ran extremely well at Churchill Downs. The only difference, I guess, being is that the turf course, I'd imagine, at Churchill last year compared to Santa Anita this year is going to be significantly different. It rained quite a bit. I know they had it listed as good. I think it was probably a little softer than good. So it's a different race course than she'll see now, but I don't see any problem with the spacing because she's done it successfully before. But to Naomi's point, campaign a little bit more grueling this year.
Sometimes O'Brien will give them a break in the summer when he's going to have this type of a fall campaign. Doesn't seem like Magical needed the break based on the fact that she's in career form. Of course, there are other horses turning up to run in this spot. And JK, I know you're more of a horizontal exotics player than a vertical exotics player. But when you're looking at the home challenge for one to throw in there in a combination, if you have one combination where you can spread in horizontals or maybe to get up underneath in the verticals, is there any that stand out to you?
Yeah, I think Mississippi is one that she ran well last time against Sister Charlie. She ran well up in Saratoga. She's one that I think could get a piece underneath at a price. She'll probably be forgotten there as one of the other Americans, and I think you probably could get a fair price on her to jump up and snag a piece.
Graham Motion, no stranger to upsetting the apple cart in this race at very big odds. We saw that with Shared Account a few years ago. How about you, Naomi? Beyond the top two, are there any in here of particular interest?
Well, I want to go with another European horse. I mean, I guess that's sort of my preference in general, although I must admit that I want to go with Bilson Brooks because I find her incredibly interesting. But I want to quickly before that say that I had a little asterisk with Murph just because her win time in the Rodeo Drive was faster than, I do believe it was about 5 of the previous filly mare turf races held at Santa Anita Park. So that was like a really interesting side part for me. But going back to the turf horses, or going back to European turf horses here, Bilson Brooks, she's ran an incredible race last time out in a Sun Chariot where she was on the rail. I mean, I know it's a mile, but she had to find a gap, found one, and then she just powered away up that Newmarket hill, making me think that she has the capability of going further because that's quite a grueling hill, and it was good to soft. So I feel like she could stay further. She has a half-sister by Dick Turpin, who's won 3 times over a mile and 2. Her sire, Champs-Élysées, has got his progeny shown to be sort of mile and a half first, or at least further. So I think she could be incredibly interesting here. I mean, she does need the speed to set up well, but I feel like there's a fair few fillies that would benefit from a little bit of speed in this race, which I hope would come courtesy of Murph or Thais. So I think she's one definitely to keep an eye on below the low-hanging fruit, the Magical and Sister Charlie.
Do you think Naomi Bilsenbrook, if the situation goes right, could beat the top two, or is she more one you're interested in underneath?
I'm going to put her underneath. I don't see her beating Magical or Sister Charlie. She's very talented. She was a Guineas winner, and she's beat she was last year's Guineas winner, and then this year's Guineas winner, Hermosa, she beat her as well. So she's obviously incredibly talented. Is she more talented than, in my books, Magical? No. Sister Charlie, that's an incredibly tough one as well, because she's going for, her seventh straight Grade 1 victory. So I'd find her hard to oppose.
It's been an amazing run for Sister Charlie, and it'll be fascinating to see if we get this tussle with Magical. If Magical doesn't show up here, JK, is this a spot where you'd feel comfortable singling Sister Charlie, or do you think you'd want a little bit of backup in the form of Mississippi, you mentioned, or possibly Bilston Brook, who Naomi put up?
No, I don't need Mississippi in that scenario. I just need her kind of underneath. I thought Sister Charlie's last race was better than it looked. She was a little bit desperate to get there last time. But I think there was kind of a funny run race, and I think that she kind of had a little bit more in the tank, and I think that she'll kind of continue to improve off of that effort. And I just think she's just so talented, Sister Charlie. She just doesn't seem like she wants to lose. Johnny seems to have a complete understanding for her and where she wants to be. Even the times I've tried to get cute and beat her, I was unsuccessful. I think she's going to be extremely tough in this spot.
Naomi, I want to ask you just some general thoughts on the rest of the Breeders' Cup. Any horses in particular you're looking forward to see run, be they from the European contingent or the home team?
I've had the fortune of talking to Brendan Walsh after Maxfield won the British Futurity. So having had experience with that horse myself, a Street Scent colt out of America called Velvety, that we got to follow with the Godolphin Flying Stud, I'm very much looking forward to seeing him run. So that would be one that I'm just, keeping my eye out for. And of course, the Breeders' Cup Classic. It's my first year going to the Breeders' Cup. So, just seeing that race, it's going to be a very, very interesting one.
That's for sure. We'll be talking about that in a future Monster Pod with our friends from Little Red Feather, who will be sending out the aforementioned Mirth in this spot. Naomi, looking forward to getting a chance to hang out with you out in California, and also looking forward to your future interviews on the In the Money Network. I think you've done a great job. That Brendan Walsh interview in particular, I thought it was pretty insightful, and I was taken by how surprised he seemed at how far along Maxfield was at this stage. You got the impression, though, that he feels pretty confident, or at least as confident as can be coming into a test this difficult?
I think he is fairly confident. I mean, it's very tricky going into those two-year-old races. The rate at which two-year-olds can develop really varies. So trying to stack them up can be really tricky. But, Brendan Walsh strikes me as someone that wouldn't be overly confident if he didn't have a reason to be. So for him to be sort of, exude that quiet confidence does give me the idea that he does think he's got a very good chance there.
Fantastic. All right, Naomi, we will see you in Southern California. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Today's show is produced in partnership with TVG, but also in partnership with a new equine charity, LRF Cares, Little Red Feather Cares. The first goal of LRF Cares is to make sure that every Little Red Feather horse, whether they retire in LRF colors or not, is given a proper chance at a second career. If a second career is not obtainable, LRF Cares will find suitable homes for all of its horses. Check out more information about LRF Cares at littleredfeather.com. Do not hesitate to contact Billy Koch or Gary Fenton about making a donation or getting involved. Support LRF Cares at littleredfeather.com. Another thing I want to let everyone know about is that the new t-shirts are here. We not only now have in stock I'm Alive in the Pick 5 shirts, as seen on social media, but we've also got our new Degenerate Horse Player t-shirts. You can order them with free shipping from our friends at Old Smoke Clothing. Go to oldsmokeclothing.com. Lots of really cool stuff on there throughout the site. But if you go under the Partners tab, find our logo, you'll see our two shirts, and at checkout, make sure you use the promo code MONEY. You're going to get free shipping from our friends at Old Smoke Clothing. If you order right away, you might even get them in time for the Breeders' Cup itself. Go to oldsmokeclothing.com and use that promo code MONEY. And now we'd like to welcome to the show to talk about the Breeders' Cup Mile, a man who's been pontificating about the Breeders' Cup for a number of years. He knows his American racing. He was one of the folks who really helped get things rocking and rolling on At the Races stateside back in the day. You'll still see him on the attheraces.com website. The wise old owl himself, Barry Faulkner. Barry, what's up?
Well, disrespect is what's up, mate. It's not that old, you know. I may be drawing my pension, but I'm still breathing, mate.
Fair enough. I saw you in the flesh the other day at Fakenham Racecourse. You were looking very, very well, I must say. Now, Barry, I know you take a very studious approach to your form study. You've described the binders of old charts that you have. When you sit down to take a look at a race such as the Breeders' Cup Mile, how much is that historical data going to influence what you eventually decide to bet or not bet in this race?
I think it's hugely important. I do a stats guide for the At the Races website, and trends from the past very often are hugely helpful in looking what may happen this time. You know, fillies have got a knocking chance in this race. They've got a great record, obviously helped by the magical Goldie Cover in the past. The French trainers were really, really influential, but none of them this year. And we've often seen, like a lot of the turf races, this as being one of our races until you guys invented that pesky character, Chad Brown. And, of course, he's put a spanner in several works over the last few years.
You mentioned Chad Brown, and I guess I want to start. My first question for you is about a horse that's probably not even going to run in this race. But I would feel like we let you get off easy if we didn't ask you your thoughts about Bricks and Mortar, and if you were the owner. He was running in your silks. Where would you run him, in this spot or in the big turf?
My little note here says, should be here, in my humble opinion. From a European perspective, I'm delighted he's gone somewhere else because I think he'd have a cracking chance in this race. I think the longer trip might not suit. I just think this is the place for him. I think it's a much better fit. I don't think he's the strongest group ever assembled from both sides of the Atlantic. So I'm Duddy's elsewhere for me looking for a winner of this race.
You've tipped your hand a little bit here, Barry, in terms of what some of your preferences might be. But sitting this far out, who do you think the key contenders are in the Breeders' Cup Mile?
Well, we started at the top of the market, unsurprisingly, with Aidan O'Brien, who has got his usual boat and a half load of runners in the Breeders' Cup. Circus Maximus is the one from his barn, his stable, 7-2 UK price at the moment, at the top of the market. And not a desperately strong favourite, but certainly favouritism. 7-2, 130 about the two prices you get. he's been oddly placed this year. I know you follow our racing. He started off in the D Stakes at Chester, which is a Derby trial for us, for the Epsom Derby. He won that nicely. He won in the Derby, running the Derby rather, finished sixth. Had a little bit of trouble. He got he stumbled early on, and we thought, okay, he'll be there a mile and a half horse from now on. And then O'Brien put him back into a mile race at St James's Palace at Ascot, which he then duly won. Nicely, as it turned out, got up right at the end, beat a really strong field. You only ever get strong fields at Royal Ascot. As you know, I've seen pictures of you there this year in your finest morning suits, looking very elegant. And then he went to the Sussex Stakes, another top grade one race for milers over here, and he just couldn't resist Too Darn Hot, another of the top three-year-old milers over here. And then, oddly, they put him back up to 10.5 furlongs again for the International, the Judmont Stakes at York. And again, he didn't stay the trip there. And then it's back to a mile again at Longchamp in September. And he wins by a nose from a horse called Roman Eyes. Boy, do I wish Roman Eyes was here. He was one of the most controversial horse races in Europe this year. They bumped quite significantly. And I'll tell you this for a fact, Peter. If this race had been run in France 10 years ago, Roman Eyes would have got that race, but the French stewards have become much more liberal on what they would permit at the end of a race. However, he's not here. And Circus Maximus is a very solid favourite, but 7-2, there's no real juice in the price, I don't think.
Yeah, that sounds fair. I do love horses that can run around Chester as ones that can come here and do well because of the tight turns, because of the fact that it's left-handed. I want to give him a little bit of extra credit for that. We're going to get your thoughts, Barry, on the European contingent a little bit later in the show. I do want to ask you, JK. Now, I know from the other races we've talked about for this podcast and talking to you in the past that you're very good at processing other information from people like Barry when it comes to evaluating the European challenge. But how do you see the home team's challenge? Are you interested? Do you see yourself backing a USA-based horse in this, or is it all about the Euros for you?
You know, usually in the turf races, I start with the Euros and I work backwards from there when it comes to the turf races. Now, obviously, those situations are a little bit different when we have the Sister Charlies and the Wise Dans and the Bricks and Mortars and so on. But in this spot, it feels like I want to lean in that direction because the Americans that I would turn to, I don't have the most confidence in. So a horse like Got Stormy, who I think is a really cool mare and has done some really good stuff this year, I'm not sure that she wows me on American soil, let alone having to deal with the European contingent. So Got Stormy made a little bit of sense to me. Look, Cullen is another one that I've kind of liked all year, but doesn't seem like he'll even get in or that he's up to challenging these. So it's going to probably be the Europeans for me. The only American I can see myself leaning on would be Uni, who had that unbelievable performance last time at Keeneland and the First Lady. And she's one that makes a little sense to me.
I never tire of mentioning Uni on this podcast. A little bit of podcast history for you, Barry. JK and I have these head-to-head bets from time to time, and I think my all-time record against him in these head-to-head bets, this is with me winning three in a row, is now something like 17 wins and 144 losses. But the best win I ever had against him was one where I had Uni on my side and we had real stakes. Sometimes we don't even make stakes when we do these head-to-heads, but in this one it was great. We had to, and I know you know your baseball, so I'll go ahead and use this analogy with you that I couldn't use to a lot of people from your part of the world, but he had to shave his facial hair in the style of a 1970s relief pitcher. He had to get the old horseshoe facial hair. So Uni, near and dear to me. I love it when she comes up. Barry, you mentioned the success that fillies have had in this race. Are you attracted to either Uni or Got Stormy in this spot?
Well, Got Stormy, I've got a note here saying, looks an impressive score in the four-star Dave at Saratoga. Ask PTF what he thought of it. So that's going to be a question for you. But she did seem to get beat fair and square last time between El Tormenta at Woodbine after going off to relatively strong flexion. So, again, it's mixed messages. I'm with Jonathan. It doesn't really wow me that at all. Uni's different. I saw the Uni race last time, and I thought that was a pretty fair effort. And again, trained by Chad Brown, you clearly can't ignore her. But so that they, I mean, it was stating the obvious in some ways between the three of us that they are the two, but neither of them are having me get too goosebumpy.
I think the draw is going to, I mean, as ever, the draw is going to be important here. Once we get a final composition of a field and can see how the pace battles might play out, I think it could become a little bit easier to settle on Uni as a selection for me. From this far out, I just sort of have her circled. Got Stormy, my issue, I mean, it's more of the same of what you guys have been saying. I mean, she's certainly got a grade one winning performance, another grade one winning performance against males in her. But you have to remember, she was just so sharp. That was, she won the two races in a span of 8 days or whatever it was at Saratoga. The race in Woodbine wasn't bad at all, but I just worry that there's not going to be much value. There's the narrative around that this is Mark Cassie's Teppan 2.0 and all this stuff. I'm not saying she's not going to end up anywhere on my tickets, but I'm not super excited when it comes to her. What about the rest of the Euros, Barry? Who else do we need to have on our radar when it comes to picking the winner of this race?
Well, a couple I'll give you at decent prices. One is a very decent price and one less so. Iridessa is a filly that interests me from Joseph O'Brien's stable. Of course, Joseph, who has got a Breeders' Cup riding success to his credit already, he brings this filly. This is the first time she's going to take on males since she broke a maiden as a two-year-old. She's only 4 from 11 overall, but three of those wins were at grade one, including the matron last time. I've probably spent more time on this filly than any other horse in this field. I would think 20% of my time has gone on this filly and the other 80% on the rest of them. And I kept getting warm and then cold and warm. She's currently around 9-1. She was 16s or something like that. I'd be reasonably interested in her because I think she is the sort who's probably still improving. And the other one who's a bit of a more of a wild swing is Lord Glitters, trained by a trainer that you guys may not know that well, called David O'Mara. This is a big grey who drops out and comes like a train. We'll clearly have to meet every light on green to get through. But on his best form, he's got a real good chance here. He's got probably the best racing post rating, best time form rating. He's right up there according to the official ratings on the BHA over here. The difficulty with him is that his last three runs after a cracking run at Royal Ascot, which, as I say, you would have seen,
yep,
Lord Glitters put up. But he then finished up the field off at fifth, rather, beating three lengths when he didn't really get a great run in the Sussex Stakes behind Circus Maximus. Another one they tried at too long a trip in the International, didn't get that. And on Saturday, he ran in the Queen Elizabeth Second Stakes at Ascot. Again, when you were there as well, you must love that pace, Peter.
I sure do.
And he, again, it was very, very heavy, really floundered in the mud. That's the reason that the trainer's giving. And he's currently 20-1. And I could really see him easily outrunning those odds. So he'd be one I'd be interested in. It may well be gets under the radar out west as well. So if he's anywhere near that sort of price, I'd be having a good look at him.
I'll add on about Lord Glitters. I know that this race has been the plan, or has been on the calendar, you could say anyway, since the Queen Anne. That was a win and you're in. They had shipped to North America in 2018. They ran at Woodbine in that Tour de Force performance by Oscar performance, but it left things too late. And that race from Lord Glitters, the other North American ship, better than it looks. Anybody who's going to say, oh, look, they came over here and didn't run that well, there's a baked-in excuse that day. And I like the fact that this race has been on the calendar all year as opposed to being a total afterthought. And I like the fact that the form looks dirty. I mean, that heavy ground loss does not look pretty. But, I mean, from having been there and seen how it played out on the day, I wouldn't hold that against inadequate distance two back. Lord Glitters is really interesting at that type of number. I agree with you completely. And I just think it's an interesting game to play in general, especially for some of the folks listening to this from overseas, people who have an opportunity to bet fixed odds. There might be a chance at doing some arbitrage type of plays in this race where you might have some of these runners in the European Challenge, and Iridessa just might be one, who end up going off longer on the USA Tote. So if you have an opportunity, if you're over there and you have an opportunity to bet the tote as well as fixed odds, make sure you take a look. And I would say you can also use the signal. If you're a USA player betting through the tote, you can use the signal of what's going on at the bookmakers. Oddschecker.com is the site we name check a lot to have an opportunity to maybe inform some of your pick plays. Do you have any other techniques, JK, when it comes down to the actual business of writing your tickets to decide ultimately which Euros are in and which Euros are out?
No, I mean, I think you made a great point with having the European market available to look at, whether it's through Oddschecker or other options. I think that it helps a lot because if the Europeans aren't betting them, then that's usually a red flag for me that there's something amiss. Because, you know, like you said, they're usually a tad bit shorter over here, and most of the time, because, you know, lazy Americans, we just say, I'll take the Euros, right? So, which I've been guilty of a number of times. One of the things that I've picked up, and especially in the mile over time, is that there's kind of two types of European runners that come over. There's the kind of galloping types and the like turn of foot types. And I wanted to ask Barry from this field, if any of those kind of fall in one of those categories, and which category do you think excels well in this race?
Well, on my stat guide, I actually pulled my stat guide up while we've been talking, and the number one point on my guideline is tactical speed is the key attribute. Look for a late kick, not a grinder. So I'd always be looking for the late kicking type, the ones that can really go through at the end. And certainly that does apply to Lord Glitters. You know, if he gets close enough, he's got the speed at the end of the race to actually see it out nicely. Of the others, I think the things like Circus Maximus, he has sat quite close in his races. But again, he's another one who showed a good turn of foot in the Longchamp race. One horse I want to chuck in, actually, another one, just thinking about it. Line of Duty, the Charlie Appleby horse, won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last year and has been 0-5 since that. But his best runs this year both have been at a mile. And he's only a length behind Circus Maximus last time. They tried to stretch him out in a race over Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe weekend. Again, he went off short price there, didn't stay. But it wouldn't have me falling off my chair if he was able to step up. But he's another one who, if you look at his buyer figure that he got last year, it is very unimpressive. But I think you can just put a line through that on his one run. At Longchamp, you would give him a bit of a squeak. And you know, the same point Pete made, the fact that, you know, he's run round an American turf track in the past, so you know he handles the tight turn he's likely to meet there.
Very interesting. What kind of price is Line of Duty with the bookies at the moment, Barry?
It's currently 16-1.
Okay. I mean, that's healthy. And you can see it. I mean, just looks like folks are going to see the 83 figure. They're going to see that the horse hasn't run this year. And I could see that price being a reality on the tote as well. JK, any other thoughts from you on another runner in this race that you are either for or potentially against?
No, I think he covered it. I guess my biggest questions were the top of the market Europeans, which he covered. And then I really wanted to make sure I plucked Barry's opinion about Bricks and Mortar going on the turf, a little cheeky move to get two insights from Barry, two different races.
Well, we didn't prep you for this question, Barry, but have you had a chance to look at any of the invaders in any other of the races? Do you have any thoughts to share when it comes to the rest of this Breeders' Cup? Have you had any wagers yet? That's another way to ask.
Well, the one you know, I had a wager yet, and that was in British Idiom in the Juvenile Fillies. I'm very impressed with that run last time, and I think it's got the lovely profile I like of a juvenile going for that race. In truth, I've really not got truly stuck into any other races. It's almost like you get these, where they're actually going to go. Magical, great example. Where is she going to end up? Well, she'll be a cracking chance in the race she's going for. But otherwise, it's very much from now to the day itself, it'll be full steam ahead with a couple of days off for Cheltenham this weekend.
Nice. Well, while we're making you play Racing Manager twice in one segment, if it were up to you, if it was your job to decide which race Magical would run in, where would she appear?
I should have gone on the turf for me.
Yeah.
So no doubt at all.
because of the extra money, extra prestige, or something about the distance, or all of the
above?
Well,
the distance, the all of the above, basically. Yeah. It just strikes me that I guess when you've got the battalion that Aidan O'Brien's got, and you're trying to fit different horses in different places, well, okay, we've got one covering that, we've got one covering that. I do remember back in the day when Sackley took on Tisnow in New York, and I can't recall off the top of my head, shows you I'm getting old, the horse they had in the turf, and I swore blind, they should go the other way around. And then, of course, Saki runs an absolute cracking race, just got nailed at the end, and they win the turf with the other one anyway. So
Bargo?
No, it wasn't Bargo, it was... it'll come. But anyway, look it up. But again, the one thing to say, I think Aidan O'Brien's trained one or two horses more than thee or me have trained, so I shall bow to the great man's judgment.
I feel that way about both Aidan and Chad Brown. For more from Barry, make sure to check us out. We're going to be doing the Final Furlong preview, our sort of brother-sister podcast, Final Furlong. Folks can check that out for more. Barry, thank you so much for your time today.
No problem at all, my friend. Good luck.
And now very excited to bring in our next guest. Couldn't think of anybody better to go over the Breeders' Cup turf than our buddy Nick Luck. Nick, how are you doing today?
Gentlemen, very well. Looking forward to it. Excited now. The pre-entries are out. And I saw one commentator on your Twitter feed saying that he would ignore everything from now on in. But that's part of the fun, isn't it? We talk rubbish for the next week.
Oh, it's great. I'll tell you what, the Breeders' Cup and the way that this event has expanded, I feel like the role of podcasters and pundits is more important than ever, simply because it's too hard to do the 100% job on 14 races oneself. So if I can hear a comment of somebody tipping a horse that I didn't get the first time, and that makes me go back and dig and means I'm alive in the pick five instead of out, I'll take that all the time. And if I have to listen to some rubbish along the way, you know, so be it. But we're really excited. We're thrilled to have you here, Nick. And this Breeders' Cup turf from this far out, before we have the final entries, I think the first thing we have to address is the questions about who's going to show up in this spot. With the two horses that seem on the fence but leaning towards yes, being Bricks and Mortar for Chad Brown and Magical, the two favorites in the anti-post betting. In your best estimation, do you think we will see both Bricks and Mortar and Magical in this spot?
Well, I'm confused because Aidan O'Brien has been saying that Magical runs in the filly and mare turf, and there's no reason to doubt what he's saying other than the fact that he's made the turf the first preference. So, am I the only person confused by that? I'm guessing, well, there's a number of things. There have been occasions before where he's first preferenced a race and then has gone the other way. And maybe they're just not that bothered, because it's not a situation where you pick up any kind of fine or censure if you jump the other way. So you're really only doing it to sort of help people out, except you're not. So I don't know, really. My view is that the logical place to run her is here in the turf, but they've always had Anthony Van Dyke lined up for this. And I wonder whether there's a bit of gamesmanship going on between Aidan and Chad Brown, in the sense that they're saying they might run Magical here in order to perhaps put Bricks and Mortar into the mile. They'd probably prefer Bricks and Mortar in the mile than here, I suspect. So I can't second guess the motivation behind it.
That's interesting.
Nick, I would run Magical here, but I suspect she'll go to the fillies race.
Nick, I think we have to ask you this question just in your opinion. First of all, do you think Bricks and Mortar should be in this spot, or do you think he would be better suited for the mile?
No, because I think the mile will be a strongly run race, and I think it'll suit him better. He's not a winner at a mile and a half, and I think the mile and a half, I think Ballydoyle will make sure the mile and a half is a strongly run race too. So, you know, that'll expose any deficiencies he has stamina-wise. So for all that the opposition is weaker or less deep in the mile and a half race, if Magical doesn't turn up, I think the mile race would be a better spot for him, which was Chad Brown's instinct. Chad Brown's instinct was go for the mile, and he's now switched up his instinct, presumably not based on the way the horse is working, but more based on what he perceives to be the calibre of opposition or the depth of the opposition. So far be it from me to tell either Chad Brown or Aidan O'Brien what to do. But if I was Chad Brown, I'd run Bricks and Mortar in the mile. And if I was Aidan O'Brien, I'd run Magical in the Filly and Mare Turf. In the all-sex turf.
I don't understand the Magical to the Filly and Mare Turf idea, really. I mean, heck, as a racing fan, the idea of the clash with Sister Charlie is certainly thrilling.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a lot less money. Yeah.
What's the point?
Yeah, I don't really get it.
It's her last run. Her value's not going to be altered. You're going to run for far more money in the turf than you are in the Filly and Mare turf. You've just won the Champion Stakes. You've just won the Irish Champion Stakes. You were second in the turf last year to an exceptional filly in Enable. You're adaptable as regards going a distance. You're adaptable as regards tactics. And you're taking on a horse who's never won at a mile and a half rather than taking on Sister Charlie, who's arguably the best turf horse in the United States. So that's why I would run Magical in the turf myself.
That's what makes sense to me. I was arguing vociferously that very point on Sky over the weekend and a little bit on the Final Furlong podcast as well. We'll see what ends up happening in the end. The other thing is, it's not like they're opposed to running two and potentially using team tactics in a race like the turf. We saw it a couple of years ago with Highland Reel and Found playing that game to absolute perfection. So if Anthony Van Dyke and Magical both run here, let's say Anthony Van Dyke, and I'm going to ask you to talk about him a lot more in a minute, but let's say Anthony Van Dyke runs second in the turf to Magical. Do you think he loses anything from that performance in terms of his future value?
Not really, because the truth of it is that his stallion potential is more likely to be covering 250 or 300 jumping mares, I would have thought. And I don't mean that disparagingly. Yeah, that's where there is value in a mile and a half turf horse standing at stud now, unless they are absolutely exceptional, unless they are a 1% top notcher. You look at a horse like Crystal Ocean, who's retired the highest rated horse in the world. He's retired straight to Coolmore to cover National Hunter horses, and that's not. People have got very upset about it because they think that it's some sort of insult to the breed and nobody wants to breed stayers. The truth of it is it's not. It's just commercial reality. The commercial reality is that a horse like him can stand for 8,000-10,000 a pop covering National Hunter horses, but they can get 300 mares underneath him. So, you don't have to be a genius to work out the math there. And he is going to be a commercial proposition in that sphere, whereas the only horses, the stallions that are going to be commercial propositions who have that kind of stamina index on the flat have got to be right out of the top draw with the best pedigree you could possibly imagine. So I don't think it's going to do that much damage to his value if he finishes second to a no.
I love the little tangent off into In the Ring pedigree podcast area. And JK, surely that's math even you can understand.
Yeah, look, that's easy work right there.
JK tries math, succeeds for once on the podcast. I like it. Let's talk about Anthony Van Dyke's chances in this race, Nick. How suited do you think he is for this test? And compare and contrast what you think of his chances versus Magical's, assuming everybody shows up to this dance.
Well, he's a little below Magical on all known evidence, but then he's been specifically prepared for this whilst she was probably brought to a peak for the Champion Stakes and has to wheel back on vastly different ground in vastly different conditions 2 weeks later. So he might be the horse that's coming into the race in the best fettle, though she is incredibly tough. I like his preparation. I like the fact that they've nailed this as the target a long way out and said that's the race for him. I think they were briefly tempted by the arc, but he's not a horse that wants soft ground by the looks of it. He was a very good two-year-old. He's very tough. He stays very well. He is a Derby winner, after all. And that was definitely a step back in the right direction in the Irish Champion Stakes. For all it was a race that Coolmore were really able to dominate, and we probably shouldn't take the form too literally, it was definitely a step back in the right direction, and he finished off his race well. So he'll run in the turf, and he's a player for sure. He's a player. If you take literally, which I never particularly like doing, but if you take literally the relative proximity to Magic Wand in the Irish Champion Stakes and see the extent to which Bricks and Mortar had to scramble to get past her in the Arlington Million, then you'd think, well, they're probably not that much between them.
he's been seen with like cheek pieces, and then last time he took them off, the headgear off. Do you think that matters, and do you think that he'll be wearing anything this time?
I think he's impervious to it, to be honest. He doesn't strike me as a horse who is particularly keen or difficult, and he doesn't strike me as a horse who requires that much galvanizing. So I think if I was Aidan O'Brien, I think I'd leave them off unless they want to ride him really aggressively. I think he's a fairly straightforward customer. I just think he's a resolute out-and-out galloper who wants a mile and a half on fast ground, and that's what he's going to get.
How do you see this race being run in terms of pace if they do both go here? How much do you think she'd be pressing with presumably Anthony Van Dyke held up? Do you think there's a chance you could even see her on the lead?
Who's going to be in front of whom, do you think? Do we think Magical would be in front of Anthony Van Dyke if they both ran in this race? I'm not sure I do, because I think one thing I think about Anthony Van Dyke is that he'll stay every yard of a mile and a half and probably more, whereas you could make a fairly cogent case that maybe Magical's optimum is mile and a quarter. Maybe she's got a little bit more toe. Maybe she's got a bit more pace than Anthony Van Dyke. So I think I'd be looking to hold on to her a little bit more if the pace was really honest. If you thought that a horse like Bandua was allowed to go forward and Acclimate presumably is going to go forward, if they go forward and Anthony Van Dyke sits handy, then, you know, Magical, if she ran, would get a nice toe into the race, I would have thought. And they're not going to go handy. If Brixton Lorcher runs here, they're not going to push him forward at this distance, I wouldn't have thought.
No, that makes perfect sense. That actually makes a lot more sense than what I was than the premise in the question I asked you.
Which then leads you on to thinking, well, provide on the basis that you think that the, you know, honourable but not as good Californian horse and the shipper from Kentucky then peel away, Anthony Van Dyke theoretically could get first run on the principles.
What do you think about the rest of the European Challenge in this spot, Nick?
Well, Old Persian's a horse that you have to have some respect for. He was brilliant in Dubai, I thought. I thought he was going to take high rank amongst middle distance horses, a mile and a half horses all the way through the season. But I was a bit disappointed with his comeback effort. And then for all that he's run respectively on the continent and respectively in Canada subsequently, I don't think that's the best of him. I think he needs to take another step forward. If he comes back to the form he's shown in Dubai, then I think he's actually quite a dangerous horse. I think he's quite an interesting horse. I'll be interested to see what the market makes of him.
It is so hard, all the inherent guesswork at this stage. JK, what do you think about the USA contingent in this spot? Do you think there is any chance of a local winning or cracking the exacta even?
I mean, look, Bricks and Mortar obviously is one that has every right to do well in the spot just because he's, you know, he's fairly accomplished. And man, I want to believe in Chad. I want to think that Chad knows that a win in the Breeders' Cup is going to absolutely lock him up for Horse of the Year. And I think he wants to do that for Mr. Klarman and for Klarvich Stables, one of his biggest supporters, if not his biggest supporter outside of, I guess, maybe Peter Brandt. So I don't think he takes this decision lightly. And I want to err on the side of thinking that maybe he's correct. If you look at Brick's races at a mile and 3/16 and a mile and a quarter twice, he was just fine there. It didn't seem like he was wanting the race to end anytime soon. So I think he could be dangerous in this spot, just depending on how the race is run. Outside of that, I didn't really see an American get the job done. Channel Maker obviously hops up every now and then and runs a freaky performance. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably an argument that suggests he might like the firm turf out in California, but he hasn't really run all that well on it in the past. Maybe the mile and a half will be the key. Those races were a little bit shorter. So I'm not leaning too much on any Americans in this spot outside of Bricks and Mortar and then the outside chance that Channel Maker can do something at a big price.
Loyal listeners are not going to be happy with me, JK, if I don't bring up Arklo in this race. There have just been so many times over the years when he has stepped up and done things we have declared him not likely to do. Can you see Arklo hitting the board in here?
In reality, no, but the way that those green and yellow silks tend to punish me, I can see it happening for sure. But no, I don't think he's good enough for these, and I thought his last performance probably looks better on paper than it actually was.
All right, Nick, I want to give you a chance to comment at the current betting that we have in this race. if you feel like the market has this right, or if you feel like there's any juice in the odds. And I'll just run down what the top of the market looks like at one of the sharper books that we have. Right now, we're looking at Bricks and Mortar 15-8, Anthony Van Dyke at 5-2, Magical at 2-1. Those are out of order for whatever reason. Old Persian at 4-1. Those are the horses taking any money at all in here. Do you see any value in that spread, or is it about right?
Well, surely you're going to get better value than that. If Bricks and Mortar is a heavy favorite such as that, you're going to get better value than that on the day, aren't you? Surely.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Of those horses. There's no way they can bet to those to those percentages. And I assume that Old Persian's going to be completely overlooked, and he might end up being the value. It's very difficult race to play until you know for sure whether Magical's in it or not.
For sure.
If Magical is in the race, then I'd be tempted to bet Anthony Van Dyke. So if Magical and Bricks and Mortar are both in the race and they make the market, I'd be tempted to bet Anthony Van Dyke for all the reasons given earlier, because I think he's had a great prep for the race and all the race conditions are ideal.
While we have you, Nick, not going to make you run down every Euro in every Breeders' Cup race at this point, and you're going to be available giving your opinion in a lot of other forums, but at this stage in one of the other turf races, is there a standout? Is there a horse that you think has a particularly great chance of winning, one you might be advising this far out from the Breeders' Cup?
Well, if you're going to ask which horse stands out on class in any of the other turf races, it's probably Arizona in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. But, yeah, we've seen horses like that come to this race before and be undone because they've had a busy season. But, yeah, he's the best horse in that race on all known evidence, and I'd be disappointed if he doesn't go pretty close to winning it. Having said that, I think the home team fancy that they've got better colts for that race than perhaps they might have normally. Outside that, the horse I'd like to see run a big race is Bilsdon Brook in the filly and mare turf, just because I think she's a tremendously game and willing filly, and thus far neither Richard Hannon nor his father before him have had a lot of success when they've travelled horses, and it sort of belies the incredible reputation and success they've had in their home country. And I think it would be very important to them to strike significantly on foreign soil, and I'd sort of hope that she can make some sort of impact. It would certainly be one of the more interesting European stories. And I suppose the other one, Albania in the Juvenile Fillies Turf for Jessica Harrington and the Arcos family, have been such great supporters of the Breeders' Cup. Certainly, if she finds better ground more to her liking than that swamp at Longchamp, she could be quite tricky to beat. She's certainly, I think, inherently more talented than either of Aidan's fillies in that race.
Nick, I know that you'll be doing a lot of press and Steve Bick and this show, and people are asking you what Europeans you like. I want to know what horse you're betting on the dirt.
Well, I like that question.
Maxfield in the Juvenile will do for me. I mean, it's about the hottest race of the weekend, isn't it? If you listen to people talking about Dale Roman's horse and Baffert's horse and saying they're the best horses they've ever trained and whatnot, but this horse has got everything. He's got the physique. He's got the pedigree. I have massive respect for the trainer. If he can ship west, which I don't see any reason why he can't, then I was massively impressed with him at Keeneland. I think Pletcher's horse that he beat's a very, very good horse, and he just swept him up and inhaled him. Now, I know the track was playing from behind that weekend, and the track's not going to be playing from behind on Breeders' Cup weekend, but when a horse is that good, he's that good. And again, you've got a couple of horses who might make the market for him. So I think at the odds, I think he might be the one.
Fantastic stuff. Nick, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and giving us that overview. We look forward to seeing you all over the Breeders' Cup coverage next week and getting a chance to hang out with you in person out there as well.
Happy days. Look forward to it, guys.
And that's going to do it for the second installment of our Breeders' Cup Monster Pods. Want to thank JK. Want to thank Duke and Paul Matisse, Naomi Tucker, Barry Faulkner, and Nick Luck. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening, supporting our partners, making these shows so much fun to do, all that good stuff. Hope you'll be joining us next week for our Stats Race Lens webinar. Look for that info on Twitter or over at the blog. And then, of course, our Final Answer pods next week, as well as the stuff we're going to be doing with the Breeders' Cup. Follow us on social to catch it all, at Looms Boldly, at UT Big Hair. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas for Natal. May you win all your photos. Hey, In the Money listeners, check this out. TVG is the official betting partner of the Breeders' Cup, and we here at the In the Money Players Podcast are proud to be an official podcast partner of TVG. We are rapidly approaching the two best racing days of the year. Get in on the action and start betting on all the great races across the country. You don't want to miss out on this exclusive offer. Download the TVG app today or go to www.tvg.com/fall for the best offer to start betting now. TVG will give you a risk-free bet up to $200 on a single horse to win in any race. You'll get a 100% refund up to $200 if your horse loses. Bet with confidence. It's a win-win when you play with TVG because TVG offers the best online betting experience with plenty of promotions for all customers, including a free-to-play $100,000 contest. TVG is available on your computer, your phone, Amazon Fire Stick, Roku, or Apple TV, pretty much anywhere you can get online. Just download the TVG app or go to www.tvg.com/fall and sign up. That's www.tvg.com/fall. Age and residency restrictions apply. Void where prohibited by law. See the full terms and conditions at www.tvg.com/fall.